You know what really makes us mad? It's wasting money on CDs with only one or two good songs.
Yeah. Talk about punk!
What's up, posers? Welcome to Punk Lotto Pod. I'm your co-host, Justin Hensley.
I am your other co-host, Dylan Hensley.
And this is the show where we assign our guests a year and they choose one punk, hardcore, emo, or punk-adjacent album from that year for us to talk about. Today's episode's a little different. Slightly. We'll explain that in a minute. What are we talking about today?
We are talking about the year 2017 and the album Rombithian by Sincere Engineer.
Fuck yeah, we are.
And you hear that other voice there. We're not alone. We are joined by our good friend Dave Brown, the host of One Band Five Songs, Oklahoma Lefty. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
This is a fun Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I felt kind of bad because when I heard that the person you were going to record with this week was out, and I was like, I could probably do that. I'll finagle my way onto the show. And then afterwards, I was like, oh, did I just force myself onto the show? I feel now like a dick.
No, this is actually really perfect. So Dylan and I were like, okay, well, our guest had to cancel. He's out of town. We'll get him at a later date. Okay, cool. So what do we do? And we're like, well, nobody likes to choose the 2010s as their decade. So let's pick a year we haven't done a million times. So we pulled up 2017, and we were going through the list. And Dylan, you were basically just told me to choose. And so I was going through the list, and I was like, I don't want to talk about any of this stuff.
Yeah, and then you picked something, and I didn't want to talk about it. And then I sent you some stuff, and you didn't pick any of those.
Yeah. Part of it was I was like trying to find that fine line between choosing a record that I wanted to talk about, but also a record that a guest in the future wasn't likely to choose. And so, like, we basically were just, like, hadn't made a decision when you messaged me asking, you know, hey, you know, you want some help on the episode? It's like, oh, thank God, because there's a 2017 record I would love to talk about, and I wouldn't feel like we're throwing it away, you know, taking it away from a guest. So that's why we wound up talking about the record we're talking about today.
Well, and also based on the Rate Your Music chart for this year, flipping through this, I'm like, what in the Sam Hill is half of this crap? I mean, I know I'm old and out of it, but sweet baby Jesus, man, I don't know what any of this stuff is.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about that because in the past, when we've looked at 2017, and especially when we hit 2017 on the our Best of the Decade episode, I noted and have repeatedly noted that 2017 is kind of the year I lost. I moved in the middle of that year, which just kind of like nuked any interest in keeping up with anything. But looking at this chart and looking at what came out and what I did listen to or what I was aware of that I didn't listen to, the other big reason I lost this year is because it sucks. There's just so much like, kind of like mediocre, like, you know, bands I like, but not that one. Mm-hmm. Or just like bands I don't like and definitely not that one.
You know, then, what's funny, yeah,
stuff I remember I've never heard of.
When you guys did your Best of the Decade episodes, and I remember listening to that, and you talked about 2017 not being a great year, and I think you mentioned 2016 not being a great year.
Right.
And when I put together my top 50 records for the 2010s, I really had to nerd out and get a spreadsheet out and figure out how many records from each year were on there. And from my list, 2015 and 2016 had 9 records each. 2017 had 8. Mm-hmm. And 2018 had 6. So it's like, I'm like, okay, I'm obviously on a way different wavelength than everyone else because the years these people are like, these years suck. Nothing good came out. And I'm like, dude, all my favorite records came out these years. What's wrong with me?
So it's funny. Like I remember on that episode, we were like, 2016 sucked, 2017 sucked, 2018 was good though. Like that was our like build up. And I was curious on what I had put down as my favorite records from that year. And I look at it now, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I love these records. But also, a lot of these would not be anywhere near my, like, all-time or of the decade, you know, records. So it is a very strange year. What should we look at first? We usually look at the Rate Your Music page just because it's a nice little, I don't know. Is it a nice little collection of, I don't know. It's a useless, I think the charts on Rate Your Music are not great for the more recent years.
Well, it's so hard when you have, you've got all these genres that kind of overlap and kind of don't. And you've got like the number one record on this list, and I don't know if any of us know who this artist is. King Krule, spelled K-R-U-L-E, which is art rock, apparently, whatever that is.
It has every genre underneath it. It's art rock with subgenres are trip hop, post-punk, jazz rock, new jazz, neo-psychedelia, alternative R&B, experimental rock, bossa nova. Dylan, you'd love this record.
Yeah, this sounds like right up your alley. My question is, what isn't this record? My God.
I am vaguely aware of King Krule. I have never listened to King Krule. So like we've noted this in the past, but kind of, I guess going back to that well of saying like the late teens has a real punk has a real identity crisis, I feel like. In 2017, looking at especially what Rate Your Music thinks are like the most notable records from 2017, like really, really exemplifies that, because it's like we get maybe like, you know, I'll go out and say like the post-punk, like Idols, that kind of stuff, Proto Martyr, like, okay, like that's punk.
They wound up being important too.
Yeah.
Because then literally every band in England decided they're going to sound like Idols now.
Which I've never listened to.
Do you like The Fall? That's always my reference.
You know, this is a bad punk rock for me. I've never listened to The Fall.
It's kind of like that, just like modern, like post-hardcore version of it. Well, also, like, people, especially in this, Rate Your Music is a Punisher website, of the worst kind of music nerd. So they hate the word punk, so they will never, like, really apply it to anything that's, like, actually punk. They'll always call it, like, it's a power pop or alternative rock. It's like, we have genre terms that exist already.
Yeah.
Ugh, this page. Ugh. What's the best thing on here? Drab Majesty? Demonstration? Yeah,
I was going to say, that's the only one on this page that like I listened to, not when it came out, but like at least close to this year.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking the first page, the one through, was it 50?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the first 40.
No kidding. I'm not like being facetious. I have never listened to any of these records. I'm scrolling through just to make sure. I mean, I've heard of Code Orange, but that's because of NXT. weren't they the band who did the Aleister Black theme song?
They performed it live.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
And they had the guy from Incendiary come out, and because it's the vocalist of Incendiary did the vocals. I think it was like the CFOs who actually like wrote the music for that, though.
They, I tell you what, CFOs were underappreciated aspect of ring entrance music. They did some doozies. That's neither here nor there. But yeah, no, seriously, I know nothing of this. I've heard of some of these bands, and I don't know, man. I don't know what to tell you. This is some nonsense on here.
You might recognize one on page two, though. It is the Menzingers' After the Party.
Yes, that is a great record, and if I'm not mistaken, was in my, not my top 10 for that year, but it was in the top 20. So, yeah, it was, I liked it. I'd say, in fact, it's one of my, it's between that and On the Impossible Past are probably my two favorite Menzingers records.
Do you ever go back and, like, look at your old lists and then see where you ranked stuff, and then you're like, why is that all the way down here at 20-something? It's, like, the only one I still listen to. It should be in the top of the list.
I have done that. In fact, I'm trying to remember, I think it was the 2012 list where there was I'm pretty sure it was either 2011 or 2012, the year that the Dave Haas solo record, his first solo record was out, was way lower on the list, and that ended up becoming one of my favorite albums of all time. When John Moreland's second solo album came out, In the Throes, that was lower on the list. In fact, there was one year that that last Sam I Am record that had 80 West on it, which is a tremendous song, ended up being like number two.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't ever go back to that record. I love that song. But yeah, and that's more with some of my older lists that I've done, I think, now than the more recent lists I look back on. Like, I'm looking at the one for 2017, and the Dave Haas record, Bury Me in Philly, was my number three. The Reviver, The Tide, and Shaggy EP was my number two record. And then the record we're discussing today was my favorite record of that year. And even looking out at the rest of the top 10, the Iron Cheek, You Can't Stay Here is on there.
Mm-hmm.
Nothington's last record is on here. So there's a lot of stuff I go back to. The Japandroids album, which I know is not considered their best album, but I love that record, is on. So I've gotten better about having a better idea of what I actually like. It's more toward the end of the list that it's like, okay, I might not have really super dug into these records in depth, but I like them enough that I want to say something about them for the five people who go to my website and look at it.
I remember that Iron Sheik record coming out and the reaction to it being like, it's not very good. And I remember being like, what are you talking about? It's Iron Sheik. It sounds like everything they've ever done.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine. It's perfectly enjoyable record. Looking back at it now, I don't think I've listened to that one since 2017. I go back to the first two. I never make it to the third one.
What's funny for me is this is the record I go back to the most. And I think part of that is a personal thing. This is one of the records I really listened to a lot this year because, you know, a lot of this has to deal with grief and coming out of loss. And earlier this year, my mother-in-law passed away. So this was something I listened to constantly in that aftermath because it was just perfect. It just fit the mood. So, yeah, I personally love this record. It's probably my favorite Iron Sheik record, which, again, I'm weird, so I'm not normal here.
You can't be as weird as the guy over here who included, let's see, in my top 10, the album Angus, from the LP1 by the band Angus.
Top 10 record for me. You're not talking about the movie soundtrack, right?
No. Okay. There was a band called Angus who were a... From the band The Young Leaves broke up, and the lead singer started a new band called Angus. And The Young Leaves are also not a name that people are going to go, oh, yeah, you know. So, yeah, that was my top 10 that year. My number two, though, I put an Iron Sheik, You Can't Stay Here, as number one. My number two is Bear Trade, Silent Unspeakable. Have you ever listened to Bear Trade, Dave?
I don't think I have. The name is vaguely familiar.
I think you'd like them. They were a UK punk band who released two records on Dead Broke, and they were like a split release. I think Specialist Subject might be the other one, but it could be someone else. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. I will have to look into these guys because, Dead Broke, great label. Apparently I follow them on Twitter. I don't know I follow too many freaking people. So I think I have listened to these guys at some point. But yeah, Dead Broke is a great label. Specialist Subject is like my second favorite label in the world. So
yeah, Bear Trade are kind of like a mixture of Leatherface and Iron Sheik. That's probably the best way to describe them.
Oh, crap. So. I'd be all over that, like stink on poop.
But yeah, with really thick British accents. So I don't know if that... Northern British accents at that, too.
Well, I mean, I really like the band Harker. And they've got a Leatherface meets Jesus and Mary Jane thing going on, and they're very British.
Yeah, so you might dig that one.
Okay,
I that's one I always recommend, a band that I recommend to people all the time, and they're always like, "Who?"
I'm looking at my Last FM plays from 2017, and apparently, I listened to "Light It Up" by Hot Water Music that year.
I did.
No memory of doing that. We listened to that album and talked about it on our show, probably in 2019.
Yeah, something like that.
I had no memory of listening to it.
That's a good record.
Previously.
I like that album, but I'm another weird one. I like newer Hot Water Music. I'm like Caution and On generally is the stuff. Well, actually, no, I take that back. No Division and On is what I really like. Because I think No Division is tremendous.
I agree with No Division being tremendous. I think we've had this discussion online, too. Yeah, Dylan and I are later Hot Water Music fans. Or, no, earlier, excuse me, earlier Hot Water Music fans. And then that always gets our opinion in trouble on the internet. Because my memory of listening to Light It Up for the first time was with... I want to say I rode with Grant McCracken to Richmond... to see Page 99 and Majority Rule. I think that was that year. And we listened to that record and we were like, what is this? It's a very different sounding album.
Yeah, I definitely don't like it as much as the one that was before it. Mm-hmm. Was that Exister?
Yeah.
I think
it's
the name of it. And I really like that. And I think they should do more records with Bill Stevenson at the Blasting Room because I thought he did a really good job of getting a good record out of them. But at this point, I mean, they're all of their weird angular... time signatures and weird crap they did early on, they've kind of pushed that aside and been like, okay, we're punk rock Bruce Springsteen now.
Yeah, I think they've taken their solo sounds and just kind of like turn those into Hot Water Music songs, which I'm really looking forward to the new one because the first song I heard was really good and I have high hopes for that record.
I concur that that first song is pretty good.
Anything else noticeable about your Last FM, Dylan?
I would say I don't listen to, I think all of the records that I listened to that came out that year, I don't really ever come back to. Probably because they were like the only new records that I listened to that year. It was like a very small handful, and I don't need to go back to them because I listened to them a lot when they came out, and that was it. I did listen to some records this week that came out in 2017. So I listened to about half of that Menzinger's record.
Dave, how do we say their name? Because I think we've said it wrong every time I've ever said it.
I've always heard it Menzinger's. So
not putting the emphasis on the g or j.
No, it's like men and zingers. Menzinger's is how I've always heard it. But I don't know. I'm not from Philadelphia, and I'm not in the band.
Yeah, they probably say, if in Philly, they probably say it real weird because you know that Philly accent.
Yeah,
Philly ice water.
You guys want going down to the Menzinger's show? I can't do a Philly accent.
I was gonna say that was almost right Canadian. Yeah, poser, take off, eh? I'm gonna get us canceled.
I also listened to a little bit of that Bully record.
Bully!
Because I really liked her most recent record.
Sugar Egg.
I listened to that. That's one of the records that I've carried over from the previous year and listened to and revisited. This record, Losing, it's not as good. I mean, it's definitely, the sound is almost there. The production's not great, and it's definitely a little bit more grungy, but... Yeah, I was curious about that one because I was not aware of them at all when that record came out. So
They're actually playing in Asheville right now, like as we're recording this. It was funny. I saw it on like the calendar like last week. I was like, "What? They're playing in Asheville?" And then I found out, Dylan, that Photocrime are also playing in Asheville tonight right now.
Yeah,
they're at the Auditorium. Bullies at the Gray Eagle. And it's just like how did I miss every band announcement for the last, like, 3 months, I guess? I don't know.
I'm pretty sure I'm missing anything that's coming to Oklahoma, or more likely nothing's coming to Oklahoma. It's, I mean, not that we've ever been a super, you know, big spot for people to come to. They will play Tulsa to play Kane's Ballroom because everyone, any band of note, has played Kane's Ballroom at some point or another in history. I actually saw Bully open up for Jawbreaker at Kane's Ballroom. They were fine. It was actually, their performance was really good. There was little to no energy in any of it. It was it was very, you know how they talk about shoegaze artists that just stand there and look at their shoes? It was that vibe, but not slow.
So. Weird. Was it after that last record?
Yeah, this would have been in either 2018 or 2019. I think it was in 2019.
Okay.
When I saw them.
So I think they put one out since then. So
I think so. They're a band that I follow, and I will always put their records in my tracking playlist on Spotify for albums I will think I might want to check out at some point during the year. And I never actually dig very deep into their music. What I hear of them, I always really like. Their new song they just dropped recently is really good. Yeah. So I might have to check out their new stuff. But they're just... They're a band that gets a lot of critical acclaim. I see them talked about a lot online for whatever that means.
Yeah, it's hard to always tell what that translates to into real life. But
exactly. So I did want to – there were a couple other records on this year that I wanted to note, if I may, that I think were real good. The first fresh full-length came out in 2017. That record is excellent. Pretty much everything that band does is excellent. Benchmarks put out a really good album. Camp Cope put out their album that got them tons of critical acclaim, and then they got really mad at anyone who was a white cis male who wrote record reviews. And I literally saw this tweet about that right after I posted my record review of the album, in which I praised it up and down. And I'm like, oh, I don't really know how to feel about this because I like what you do, and now you're making me feel like shit. So I don't know.
It's probably more. It was probably more aimed at the pitchforks of the world. I'm guessing.
God. Yeah, they suck. Anyway, yeah. It's but that band is, you know, Camp Cope. That band is angry. They are very angry. At least the lead singer. She is a, and they make tremendous music. But man, they're angry.
Did you see? You probably saw this too. Fresh just signed to Get Better Records.
Like, I did.
Today, yeah. They announced it.
Oh, I didn't see that. I did see they have a new song out that it says it's a special subject / Get Better.
Yeah.
I wonder if those labels are just going to merge at some point.
Or it's like the UK office, the US office type thing.
Yeah, something like that. But Get Better, I like. That's a good label. They put out a bunch of good stuff.
Yeah.
But
a lot of our past guests have come from that label.
Very much so. Tim Berry also put out a record in 2017 that was good. The Bash and Pop reunion, air quotes, reunion record. It's, you know, it's Tommy Stinson with his new Hired Guns. Warriors put out an album.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I listened to that one this week, too. And I realized why I have very little memory of it. It's just kind of weak. Maybe you have a different opinion on it, but it doesn't have the standout songs that the record before it has. And then their latest record.
Yeah,
I feel like it's just lacking real hooks.
That was the first, that record was the first one of theirs that I ever heard. And I liked it enough that I bought the CD, but I never go back to it. That said, their latest EP, which is a covers EP, is in my top 10 records of the year because it's freaking phenomenal. And it's,
yeah, I loved it.
Oh my God, it's so good. And it's one of those things where whatever they do going forward, I'm going to pay very close attention to it because this album, this EP of covers, I love so much.
Yeah, their record from last year is one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's great.
From that year, it's great. I'm fully in on Warriors now. I think seeing them live was like the real tipping point. Seeing them at Fest, it was like, this makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
This is a band that I have known whether I knew it or not. I really still need to go back and do the Measure records and listen to their discography too, but just add it to the pile.
Well, we've been going for a good 30 minutes on the year, so let's shift over to the actual record we are supposedly talking about today. So, we are talking about Sincere Engineers' Rombithian. Chicago, Illinois, formed in 2015, originally started as an acoustic solo project, then later evolved into a full band. This is their first full-length album. It was released on Red Scare Industries, and the personnel on this album is Deanna Belos, Matt Jordan, and Kyle Gabe, G-E-I-B, not entirely sure, Gabe. And it also features some additional guitar work by Evan Weiss of Intuit Over It. The album was record was produced by Matt Jordan as well. So we'll get into some of that other stuff a little bit later. Normally, this is where I ask, you know, like, what made you choose this album, Dave? And then it didn't work that way this time. So
no, because I think you know how obnoxiously much. I love A, this album, and B, this band. So yeah, the story behind the way the band itself came together, this was a solo project, and Deanna became friends with Toby from Red Scare, which Red Scare Industries, my favorite record label going right now. It's just a phenomenal label. So he signed her, and then it was decided that they were going to put a band together. And she was like, I just thought I was going to do a Sundowner type record. And even Sundowner guy, whose name I don't know because I'm really bad at Lawrence Arms names, but he told her, he's like, which would you rather listen to, a Sundowner record or a Lawrence Arms record? And she was like, a Lawrence Arms record. He's like, okay, we're putting a band together. And so the band was put together for the recording of the album. They recorded the album and then played shows and toured together and have since become a solid unit. And by all accounts, they're all great friends. And that band is tight as fuck. Oh my God, they are so good. I saw them in 2019, 2018. These years just blur together. But I saw them. Her voice was wrecked. She could barely talk, let alone sing. And the performances were still so incredible because that band is so freaking good. And there's something really off-kilter about their music that I love, because while it is definitely, you know, rock and roll, punk rock type stuff, there's just something in the way that she uses chords, and I'm not musical enough to understand the jargon or the lingo, so forgive me, but there's something in the way these songs are structured and played that there's just something offbeat enough, and there's definitely parts that are just your straightforward bar chord type, you know, riffs, but then there's other just little things on this album that musically I love. It's just so unique sounding in a lot of ways, and yeah, I adore this record. It was also my top album of the decade.
Dylan, when were you first introduced to Sincere Engineer?
At Fest, probably that year, 2017.
Had you listened to them before then?
I hadn't listened to them. You were like, this band's really good, I really liked this record, let's go see them. I was like, sure, whatever. I don't have anything else I want to see right now, so I'll go watch a new band. If you say they're good, I'm sure that I'll enjoy them. That room was slammed full of people. Like, it was watching a band's hype be born.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They were just, I think after they played, you're like, this band's going to be huge.
Yeah. And I think I was right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they're at their peak yet. They're there yet. I think that they took maybe too long to have a follow-up.
Maybe.
And then the pandemic, which their new record that came out this year, I wouldn't be surprised at all if it was done and was supposed to have been released.
Yeah.
And then just got delayed because of the pandemic. So we'll see where we go post-pandemic on that record as far as their... But, I mean, they're on Hopeless Records now, so...
They're on tour right now, too. I mean, they're the opening act on the tours, but...
Yeah, they're opening for Hot Mulligan, I think.
Yeah. And they have, like, another tour I think they just announced that's coming up next. And, unfortunately, not through here anywhere. I was introduced to this band by our good friend Corey. He sent it to me. He's like, have you heard this record? And I'd seen the artwork before, but for some reason, I don't know. I didn't have anybody telling me to listen to it, so I hadn't. So then, like, I was like, okay, yeah, I'll listen to it. It was, like, 2018, I think, is when I listened to it for the first time. And I was like, this record is great. It's so good. Like, all these songs are just excellent. And then I wound up, going at Fest. I was like, hell yeah, we're going to go see them. Because this is going to be one of those sets that you're going to remember. And it was one of those sets that I remembered very vividly. And it did remind me of when I saw the Menzingers. See, I said it that time. At
the
Fest.
The Menzingers.
At Fest, the year before they blew up. Like, they played the Atlantic, which is one of the smaller rooms, but it was to the point where half of the audience was on the stage with them while they were playing. And they had to, like, make everybody get down, because, like, we can't even play. Get down. I'm trying to think which record that would have been on. It was, like, one of the first full lengths they did. It would have been...
Chamberlain Waits.
Chamberlain Waits.
Yeah.
No. It was right after A Lesson in the Abuse of Information Technology. That was the one that had come out. And so it was probably like right before Chamberlain Waits came out. But yeah, it was just... No, it was on... Oh, Hold On Dodge. Okay, that was the one that had come out. The EP. Because I remember that album art very vividly. So yeah, then they, you know, Chamberlain Waits comes out next, and then they get massive after that. So yeah, seeing them, Sincere Engineer at Fest reminded me of that exact same, like, oh, they're going to be huge. So
what I loved about the show that I went to, they were opening for some indie rock band that name escapes me. And they, so the place went bonkers for them. And there were people that knew all the words. And this was, you know, weeknight in Oklahoma City, and I had no idea what this was going to be like. And I'm looking around the room. I'm like, not that I go to a lot of shows, mind you, but I'm looking around. I'm like, okay, who the hell are you people? And at what point did I age out? And what kind of shows do y'all normally go to? Because I have never seen anybody who looks like any of you motherfuckers at a punk show ever. And that's when I also realized that, okay, this is a band that is going to absolutely transcend just being a punk band, because even just musically, they sound like they're definitely, you know, a punk or punk inspired band. But this is a record, and their new record is another one that you can hand to someone who, you know, listens to a lot of indie rock or other kinds of things, and they'll get a lot out of it. So that's why I agree. I think eventually that this band's going to be huge, and they're super nice people. So I, it couldn't happen to better folks, because when I did get to meet Deanna, she is an absolute sweetheart, and to the point where she just so we go up to Steve and my good friend Steve, who Justin co-hosts a wrestling podcast with. We were at the show. We go up to the merch table, and Steve's like, "Do you have this on vinyl?" I was like, "Dude, I pre-ordered the CD when it was only available on Interpunk." After I emailed Toby from Red Scare and was like, "Hey, are you going to get paid for this? Because I'd rather just buy it from you." And he responds, he's like, yeah, I'm going to get paid. Don't worry. It's like, okay. So I ordered the CD from them. I got it on Bandcamp, and I had gotten the vinyl. So I have this in all formats. And so Deanna just was like, "What shirt do you want?" And just gave me a shirt. So,
wow.
Yeah. Just tremendous human being. And yeah, this album is so good. And what... And I just talked about the music. The thing that really I love about this record are the lyrics. And she has a way to hit you emotionally with things that are obviously very super personal. But it's one of those things where it is so, so bloody personal that it becomes universal. As there are songs on here I'm listening to, I'm like, how did a 25-year-old write a song that's expressing what I'm feeling at like 40, whatever I was, when this came out? And it was... Yeah, that's just what kills me. If you can't tell, I obnoxiously love this record.
Yeah, I mean, the lyrics are the thing about this record that I'm like, even the new record too, is like the thing that really hooks me with this band. And if you've been paying attention to this show or listened to multiple episodes, you'll know I've said in the past, I'm not really even that much of a lyrics guy. Like, I don't pay attention to what the singer is usually saying in a song, more of like how they say it and how it sounds. So like, that's the main thing I focus on. Now that being said, I appreciate good lyrics when I go and read them, but like, that's not the takeaway I get. This band is one of those bands that go, I listen to the lyrics and I'm like, I'm connecting on all of these lyrics. They're all leaping out at me in a way that like just hits me just right. So yeah, this is one of my like, I don't know, 5 to 10 current bands that have lyrics that I actually pay attention to whenever they put out records.
I think the thing that made her lyrics stand out to me, I didn't really pay super close attention to like to them. And they definitely stand out, and they're hard to not hear. I mean, on the first listen, you can definitely catch most of what she's saying, which is much to their benefit, and it's something that punk bands almost always benefit from, where you make your lyrics legible. But something that struck me as like what made her lyrics really pop out is her phrasing. And she's got a little bit of the like emo pop punk kind of typical phrasing, but then not. Like, she'll have lines that don't follow that meter perfectly, and she'll have word choices that kind of break the meter of her lyrics, and it's, I like when singers do that, where they're trying to fit a lot of words into a line, and I think that that carries into the way that her songs are structured, too. Like, you were saying that they have this kind of off-kilter thing, and I think it's from her being like, I have this line that's not a perfect, you know, iambic pentameter or whatever meter that you're writing music in or writing lyrics to, but I don't want to change it. And so you end up structuring the song around the meter, this kind of odd meter that you're doing. I love when singers do that. And I think that makes her lyrics that much stronger. It makes them cut through so much stronger. That makes the songs that much better, because they're just like, I'm making a stylistic choice that is not correct instead of forcing it to fit. And I'm making something that's more human and relatable and sincere, to be on the nose.
And that, I can see that, because that's the fact that she came from writing these songs all on acoustic guitar just by herself. And I don't know if she does lyrics first or she does the music part first. I wouldn't be surprised if she came up with her lyrics first. Yeah, these, I'm looking over at the Genius site on some of these lyrics, and these things just, the song I think I go back to a lot is also one of the most popular songs from the band on, according to Spotify, and that's Overbite. And that chorus of, I don't care about anything as much as I used to. Just, I remember hearing that the first time and I was like, hell yeah, I don't either. It's just, it's great. And then there's the final song on the record, Ghosts in the Graveyard. That's one that I want played at my funeral. I've got, as macabre as it sounds, I have my funeral playlist all set up and ready to go. I should probably put this in writing. But that,
or at least in podcast form.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be a dark episode of my show.
Hey, here's my playlist.
When you're setting my corpse on fire in the woods, this is what I want you to play. So right when you light it, that's when I want U2's 40 to start, okay?
Ghost in the Graveyard was one that I specifically was like, hearing the crowd sing along to it was the one of the ones where I was just like, oh, this is special. This is like incredible that this is happening right now. I don't think I've ever had, seeing a band live, the most amazing experience with seeing a band live is, to me personally, is when the entire crowd knows every word of the songs and they sing along with it. Like, that just, that gets me every single time.
Oh, 100%. Like, I think at this point, the best show I have ever seen was a Frank Turner show in Dallas. And actually, it was the first time I saw the Menzingers and Lucero both opened that show. And that was on the Be More Kind tour. And it was, everyone in that building knew every lyric to every single song, screamed it at the top of their lungs. And it was like almost a religious experience, which, coming, you know, from an artist who is a devout atheist, is something kind of ironic. But yeah, when I saw Sincere Engineer, they opened with Ghosts in the Graveyard, and the place, there's that one spot in the song that has the crowd, is just designed for a crowd to just scream it at the top of their lungs. And we did. We just bellowed it out, and it was so great. But the other thing, there's a little bit, if you've ever noticed it, when the song ends, it keeps going for a bit, and it mm-hmm. sounds like she's like putting up her instrument or something in the studio. And I have, from the moment I heard that, I'm like, okay, is this a nod to what the Replacements had at the end of all of their records? Or is this just me trying to connect two of my favorite things in the world? Because at the end of every Replacements record, there was, at the last song ends, and there was a sound of someone putting down their instrument, walking to the door, going through the door and locking it and leaving. And that's at the end of all of them, all seven of their albums. And it's, or I guess one of them was an EP. Anyway, and I just kept thinking, I was like, is this a nod to the Replacements? I doubt it is, but that was the, that was what I put together in my head.
The line that you're, I think you referenced to in this, in that song live, is it the Buried at Sea line?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Because I think they opened with that at Fest too. And I think, I don't know like how much touring they had done. The way that she talked, it was like they hadn't, either they hadn't played as a unit in this version before, or just, or at least in a very long time. Cause it was like something like her dad drove her there from Chicago, just her and her dad. And then like the band met her there.
Yeah. That
so
tracks.
Maybe it was, they hadn't had a chance to like rehearse or practice. And then when the audience hit that Buried at Sea part, she was like almost taken aback at like how hard everyone hit on that, on that song.
From what I can tell, I've never been lucky enough to have gone to Fest, but that is, if you are a band that is kind of an up and coming band, especially in punk circles, that is just a great place to really kind of kickstart things. There's a band who shall no longer be named, because the main person behind that band ended up apparently being a creep. But when they started out, like one of the first things they ever did was Fest, and the stories of that show and the like video footage I saw of it was just bonkers.
Mm-hmm. It is like one of the few things that I think, I love Fest and been going for a really long time. They're not the festival you go to for the reunions for the most part. We've constantly referenced how Riot Fest steals every show that should be happening at Fest before, and they miss all the reunions for some reason, like the first year they happen, and they catch them a year later. But the thing that they're best at is maybe like breaking new bands, because I feel like those are the ones that I remember the most. Like seeing those bands in a small venue, for like seeing Sprainard right after Fun Titled came out in a tiny little room, like that is burned into my memory. Like I'll never forget that show, you know. Well, or seeing like AJJ after People Who Eat People had come out a couple years before, and they hadn't put out Can't Maintain yet, and having every single person in that room sing every word to every song.
That actually makes sense, because if you think about it, Riot Fest has much bigger pocketbooks. Who's going to be able to write that check to convince whoever, you know, Jawbreaker or whoever the hell, hey, let's get back together? And when said band decides, hey, this is kind of fun, at that point, and they've toured for a while, at that point, when the Fest guys show up, go, I don't have Riot Fest money, but I know you're on the road. You want to come to an amazing show? We'll have a good time. They're going to be more apt to do it. So quick side note, of all the potential bands that Riot Fest could convince with the checkbook to reunite, who is just the ultimate band to get to reunite in Chicago at a Riot Fest?
That would get me to go to Riot Fest.
Like who is, well, who's the holy grail of all potential artists that could, bands that could reunite at that show, at that kind of festival? The first thing that always comes to mind for me when I think about this, I'm like, well, if they could get the Smiths to reunite, then, you know, that's just, I mean, they would literally have like convinced God to do something, because it's never going to happen.
Morrissey aside.
Right, exactly.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is even if they were to arrange it, there's still a very large chance that it's not going to happen, because Morrissey will just not show up.
Right. Which is,
or he'll get, or if there's also even the possibility that he'll get there that day and then his hair won't look right and he won't go on.
It would almost be worth it if they did, and then the band just collapsed in the middle of it and got into a huge fight. That would be, I mean, if I was right,
they need to have Rick Astley waiting in the wings for that in the event that Morrissey backs out, then he just can step in. That. They could also just do that. They could just get Rick Astley and the Smiths.
I kind of love
people
this
would
idea.
Probably show up for that.
Yeah, that would.
He has a close enough. He has a voice that's like in that weird pocket that they both occupy. Astley's actually probably a better singer.
He's
quote
got
unquote.
A weird voice. Rick Astley is a much better singer.
Yeah,
for sure. A way better singer.
He's like really, really talented vocally, and Morrissey just has a thing that he does.
Right. I think the other band that I think of that if they could get to reunite would be amazing is Operation Ivy.
You know, the way people talk on the internet right now, that looks like it might be like the next one, you know, never gonna reunite band that actually could potentially do it. So maybe we'll see.
That one's more believable to me than like Fugazi or
Fugazi couldn't get Fugazi with money.
That's the thing. If Fugazi ever reunites, you'll never see them because it'll be in a bookstore in DC with like the maximum number of people that they could legally allow into the building, and like hundreds of people just standing outside.
Well, apparently they get together and play like on a relatively regular basis. They're all friends, and they just
they've all done projects together too since then. The one I was thinking of would be the Talking Heads. Like, that should be the one that, like, somehow, some way. I don't think it will ever happen. They all kind of hate David Byrne, but...
I mean, how much do you hate David Byrne? How many dollars do you hate David Byrne?
And then I thought, like, maybe The Jam, but, like, I don't think you could ever get, what's his name, Paul, to ever do it? Peter?
Yeah.
The main guy from The Jam?
Paul.
It's just like, you'll never get it to happen. Because he hates nostalgia. Isn't he one of those guys? I hate nostalgia.
Yeah.
Do you hate like $1 million? Because I don't hate $1 million. I mean,
they got Danzig to do Misfits, you know.
Though I Danzig had to protect his, he had to do live shows with the Misfits. That's right. Otherwise he would have to give up his trademark.
That's right.
Yeah, that was part
so
of
it. So like, that's more than $1 million. That's a couple million dollars.
Yeah. That was part of their, one of their lawsuits / not get out of jail free card. When you decide to not sue each other, gimmick, whatever.
Settlement?
Whatever. They decide to settle out of court. It was part of that.
That was the people's court ruling.
Yeah. Yeah, part of it was, yes, you sad old men, you have to play together again. And, you know, they got Madison Square Garden out of it, so... Which, for guys from New Jersey, that's a big deal.
Yeah. That and, like, I've heard they're not really that fun live.
I'm sure they're awful.
This is shocking.
I mean, if Riot Fest got the Weaker Thans, I think I would go.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's a very large chance that the fest won't get them the next year.
Yeah. I also don't think you Riot Fest could lure Weaker Thans either, unless you were like gonna build a wing on a library in Winnipeg or something.
Yeah, you gotta have a good eye catching enough postcard to mail. To
That's
John
right,
for him to actually take it. You gotta put a phone number on it for him to call.
Now, not to sound mean, but are the Weaker Thans a big enough band for a Riot Fest headline that they would, you know, write a 7-figure check to get someone to come out? No, I'm not, and I don't mean this disrespectfully at all, because I don't know their music as well as I should, but everything I've ever heard, I think is phenomenal.
I think they are.
Yeah.
They're maybe like the smallest band though.
On that, yeah. They're like the tier slightly below Jawbreaker, I think. But you know what? They probably are on par with, like, an Operation Ivy as far as, like, the draw that it would have.
See, I don't know, man, because Operation Ivy, they've got the benefit of Rancid. And Rancid is real big and has been for a long time.
But the Weaker Thans have the benefit of Canada.
Yeah, true. But it's a show in Chicago, which I guess is not that far away from Canada.
Right. Yeah.
don't know. The one time
we're way off the record.
We are. I apologize. I did real quick. One last Riot Fest thing. Steve and I went to Riot Fest when it was in Dallas one year, and it was we went to see mostly the Descendants. So the Descendants were there. Gaslight Anthem was the only time I ever saw Gaslight Anthem, so I was super happy about that. Teenage Bottle Rocket played at the same time as Gaslight Anthem, so I only saw the last song of theirs. NoFX played, and I wish I could get that hour and a half back. And then,
hour and a half.
I think that's how long they actually were like, we're cutting our set short so the Descendants can play longer. And the Descendants set to me was even disappointing. This was the first time I'd seen them, and I was still hoping that they would do some all songs because they used to do that. And no, they don't do that anymore because, well, in their defense, no one in that audience would have probably known. and then Rise Against was the headliner. And at that point, after the Descendants played, Steve and I were like, yeah, I'm tired. Let's go home. So we left.
They booked Rise Against over the Descendants?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Rise Against is a much bigger band. Like,
Justin doesn't know that Rise Against is huge.
let's put it this way. So our local butt rock station that plays air quotes new rock music, which is all, God, I got in real trouble when I called it a white trash station once, but that's honest to God what it is. They play Rise Against. Rise Against is huge.
You know, I've heard them on my alternative new rock station, but that was also like 15 years ago I heard them. So are they still
playing it? I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure they are.
And this radio station I'm referring to is it's like a hair metal station. They were reluctant to play Nirvana in 91. They had to play Nirvana kicking and screaming. So that's the kind of place I'm talking about. It's a KATT if you want to check it out in Oklahoma City. It's anyway.
Rise Against has 5 million monthly listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huge.
Turns out I don't know shit about shit.
And you know, the best thing Rise Against has going for them, other than Tim seems like a nice enough guy, their guitarist, oh my God, Zach, he was in Hagfish from Dallas, Texas, and Hagfish freaking ruled, and he's a super nice guy.
I listened to the new record they put out this year, and I don't remember anything about it.
I listened to, oh God, was it Endgame? Was the last one I really listened to, and I think what I liked most about it is Chad Price did all the background vocals, and it was you could really hear him in his background vocals, and I love anything Chad Price does, so that was awesome. Speaking of, I'm really looking forward to the new Vulture Wake record. They just signed to Thousand Island Records, so that should be pretty cool. I guess we should probably talk a little bit more about Sincere Engineer.
This always happens whenever we get a record that we all like, everybody likes the same amount almost. It's always one of these ones where it's like, what else we got? What else we got? You know?
Well, sometimes it gets kind of boring when you just say, I really like it over and over.
Yeah.
I have one negative thing that I will say about this record.
Why does this not surprise me?
Well, when Justin said that Evan Weiss
Oh, yeah.
Plays guitar on this record. I was like, yep, he sure does.
Yeah.
He plays that Evan Weiss riff.
So
I hate it.
So there is... I listened to this record again earlier. I listened to it last week, maybe, to refresh myself. And then let's do it again this week. And I was like, yes, Corn Dog Sonnet. Yes, Ceramic Tile. Yes, Overbite. And we get to Here's Your $2. And I'm like, I have no memory of this song whatsoever. And then, like, after that, 1K Rats. Yes. Well, you know, like, I remembered every single song on this record except the Evan Weiss song.
So you're going to have to bring me up to speed. Who is Evan Weiss and what is it about his playing that you don't like?
Go ahead.
It's Intuit Over It. If you're aware of them.
Heard of them, never listened.
Yeah. He did a 50, he did a song a week thing, and he released it as a record called 52 Weeks. Every single song sounds the same. I don't know how you write 52 songs in a year and not a single one of them sounds different. I wrote four songs this week that all sound different from each other. So, I don't, it's easy to write 52 songs when you use the same riff on all of them.
Let's see. Intuit Over It, that's his main project, but he's also been involved with Stay Ahead of the Weather, There. Is he have another one too?
He had an older band before.
Yeah. He came up during a time period. During the emo revival, like early, you know, the late 2000s, early 2010s. And he was always one that was like, he was huge, but like, we never got it. Like, listening to this record and then like hearing that song and going, this is the weakest song on the album. And then seeing that he like played guitar on it and like has a writing credit on it too. I'm like, oh, that's why I think it's the weakest song on there.
I didn't realize it was him when I was listening to it, but when the song came on, I was like, what's this? Why are they doing? Why are they doing a Midwest emo tappy song? I mean, I would have chalked it up to the time period, but by 2017, that's not really common. I didn't feel like bands were doing that sound. So it felt weird to be like, oh, we're going to have the Midwest emo song on here.
I would see
the quote unquote Midwest emo, because I feel like the rest of this record is very much Midwest emo, just not that American football style.
Yeah, Midwest emo is one of those terms that's kind of hard to define. Well, I mean, anymore, all these terms are so nebulous. It's like, what does that actually even mean? My thing with this song is one, I'm kind of bad with song titles anymore, thanks to streaming, because I'm not looking at something following along like I used to with my, you know, cassette labels and everything. But I keep thinking that this is a reference to that John Cusack movie, Better Off Dead. You know, where's my $2?
I hope it is. Yeah. Did you ever listen to that band Lane Meyer?
I did not.
That's like a reference to that. That was Cusack's name in that movie.
Oh, okay.
And like, I think the record even starts off with like, you know, like the two Asian guys who learned English by watching like Howard Cosell.
Yeah.
Like football commentary. It starts off with their dialogue from the movie.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm going to have to catchy, check that
like,
out.
It's like a pop punk record. I haven't listened to it in forever. I don't know if it holds up, but I hope that was what the reference is, but I don't know. Like, reading the lyrics, it's, you know, it's the one that even connects the least for me lyrically.
No, I don't.
Like, reading it again.
It's one that, I don't know, so much for me, this album is just of a whole. And it's real interesting, like, listening to this record compared to my experience with the new album, which by the time Bless My Psyche came out earlier this year, like, six of the songs had already been released. I think there had been five singles. And then one of the songs was on a Red Scare Industries, their 15-year comp, and they recorded a new version of it for the record. So I knew like half of the album, and it actually took me a while to get used to their placement in order on the record. So where Rombithian hit me immediately, and I was like, oh my God, I love this. With Bless My Psyche, it's been a situation of, okay, like Tourniquet has been hands down my favorite song of the year. And then, God, the one that comes right after that, which I'm blanking on, was my second favorite song of the year. Those are the two songs I've listened to more than anything else this year, and I love them. And I think those two are really of a piece with each other. And in fact, on the album, they just seamlessly flow from one into the other. And even when the Tourniquet single came out, the song kind of ends abruptly. And I thought to myself, I'm like, I bet that just feeds directly into the next song in the record. And the next single was the song that follows that. And I was like, that's it. And so it's actually taken me a while to appreciate Bless My Psyche as a whole, as an album. And now when I listen to it, I might like it a little bit more. I do think it's a little bit better produced. I think it sounds better, but I mean, they've got Hopeless Records money, which when this was announced, I remember thinking, wait, why'd you leave Red Scare? And because having no idea, somehow to me, Hopeless was like some, you know, mamby-pamby 90s pop punk label that I hadn't realized had actually had hit records on them. And so when I looked up the record label, I was like, oh no, that's a bigger record label. Yeah, they upgraded.
There's a shift in the Hopeless Records discography that, like, at one point it's like Adam and His Package and Dillinger Four, you know, like those kind of bands. And then they hit, what was it, All Time Low? It's like, that's the one that was like, nope, we're doing this now. And like, that's what the rest of the label became after a while.
What are they doing right now other than this?
They're putting out records you're not listening to.
Yeah.
But lots of other people are.
Yeah. It's one of those deals.
They actually...
Oh, Foxing, Tiger's Jaw. Yeah, all right.
And they...
Yep, it's all the bands you don't care about.
Yeah.
They also did the new Illuminati Hotties record as well.
Oh, okay.
Which is incredible. In fact, she has not vanity label, but her own sub-label under Hopeless, which I guess is technically a vanity label. I don't mean that in a bad way. But
like an imprint?
Yes, thank you. That's the word I was looking for.
Okay.
What else is on that? I'm pulling up like the stuff they put out this year.
Okay, I see. Yeah, it's her Snack Shack Tracks is her.
Yes.
Under exclusive license to Hopeless.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they've got...
So which means if she chooses to take it away, she can.
Right.
Yeah. I liked that Illuminati Hotties record.
Yeah, I think it's probably their best one.
Oh, I 100% agree. It is the best thing they've done so far, and it is also in my top five albums of this year.
Dylan, you'll be happy to see that Mustard Plug are still on Hopeless Records, though.
Good. Good for Mustard Plug. Good for Hopeless.
Yeah.
Not ditching. They've been waiting. They've been holding on to them. They know that the Ska Revival is coming.
Yeah.
Of any year, this was going to be the year, man. This is the closest, I think, between that shockingly, ridiculously better than it had any right to be Mighty Mighty Boston's album. And then you've got the Cat Bait. I did pronounce that right, right? Or is it Cat Bite?
Cat Bite.
Thank you. So, sorry.
Cat Bait.
That's a sister band. but you know, between records like that, I mean, Scott kind of had a year.
Yeah, Scott had a really good year. You know, We Are the Union was one of the really big ones. Jer and Scott 2 Network is constantly, you know, being referenced.
God, his videos are hilarious.
They're so good.
Shape of Scott to come.
Yeah, that new comp that's coming just out.
Yep.
It's new all new songs.
Christmas record.
Yeah. There's even other stuff. Like, there's like a Joystick record that's really good. Flying Raccoon Suit was really good. Abrascadabra, which is like a Brazilian ska band, put out a good record. Like, it's a good ska year.
Abrascadabra. How did no one already come up with that name? That's brilliant.
That feels like it should have been a band in 1996 already.
I know, right?
Man. I think of some sometimes, and I'm like, someone's got this name already, right? And I look them up, and they're not taken.
Yet then there's some...
I can't believe there's no Dante Scaligari. I mean, come on.
But then you sometimes...
I figured at least Mephistopheles would have named an album that, but they didn't.
Yet then there's some bands that have... They're 14 different bands with the same name. And you're like, how? And like half of them have come out in like the last, like, you know, 7 years. And like,
they're all hardcore bands that put out one EP. They just pass the name on.
And that's, you know how much like the streaming services have got to hate that stuff, because they just get this data in there, and next thing you know, they're like four bands with the same name all under one heading, and it's like different people, and that's got to be a huge pain. And you're some band like Fresh mentioned this. They will sometimes periodically, other artists with the name Fresh will show up under their thing on Spotify, and they'll have to like tell Spotify that's not us. Or or then you get bands like the Ducky Boys, where half of their discography is under one the Ducky Boys and the other half is under another the Ducky Boys. It's like, can we not just put this together? I'm pretty sure there aren't a whole lot of bands called the Ducky Boys.
Man, you should really go try and find any album by the band Merry Christmas. You'll never be able to find it. Like,
why? You have to add other search terms, a song title, or
why would why would you do that? So I run into,
ironically, they've never released a Christmas song either.
Okay, now that's see that I like that. I think that shows
you kind of can't,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, or it just means all of your songs are Christmas songs now.
True.
Right. They're on my Christmas playlist.
I run into this at my day job with books, and some people put out like, yeah, I'm looking for that new book called Fun. And I'm thinking to myself, why in the fuck is anyone releasing a book with a one-word title like this? Are you fucking kidding me? How hard is this going to be for me to find? Do you know who the author is? No. Fuck me. So I'm Googling. I'm like, who the fuck does this? It's almost as hard as trying to figure out what the new James Patterson book is. Because I kid you not, that MF-er releases four or five books a month because he's got like a sweatshop of writers.
Mm-hmm.
But we have this one old lady who comes in every month. I want that new James Patterson book. And I'm looking at her. I'm like, Carlene, he puts out four a month. Which one do you want? I'm like, do you want the children's book that's in his name? Do you want the teen book? Do you want the Alex Cross book? What do you want? I don't know, because he puts out so many and I don't care about any of them.
What is his teen book called? It's like Maximum.
That was Maximum Overdrive. I think that's over. That was that was his successful teen books, and he still churns out so many. God, it's so painful.
I forgot it was called Maximum Overdrive, because to me it's still just that movie from the 80s that Stephen King directed.
Oh, that's the one with the truck, right?
The Green Goblin face.
Oh my God, I saw that movie as a child, like in elementary school. Terrifying. Beautifully directed.
I caught it on TV too as a kid, because it was like always like Saturday, you know, repeat movies, all that kind of stuff. And it scared the hell out of me. I was like, can this happen? Can machines come to life and run us over?
starring Emilio Estevez and Yeardley Smith.
Yes. Have you ever seen this movie?
I've never seen it.
This is an amazing movie that you must watch.
Are there any punk songs in the soundtrack?
I was going to say, can we justify this as a master punk theater?
No, but I do have suggestions for you for future installments. So
yeah, you know, we were trying to think, we could talk about this now. We were trying to think of one that's like Christmas, and like, I don't think punk Christmas movies exist. I can't think of a single one.
I legit Googled that today because I saw that the Patreon notice you guys put out, and I was like, ooh, punk Christmas movies. Let me see what I can find. Nothing.
I can't find anything. No. The best thing I could come up with is there's a Susie and the Banshees song in the movie Batman Returns. That was my best bet.
Is that the one with Kiss from a Rose? No, that's
no. Oh God.
Okay.
That's later.
Forgive me for my mini rant, but Kiss from a Rose is quite possibly the worst song ever written and ever released. It is one of three. The other two are Moves Like Jagger and Lady in Red. Three worst songs ever. Horrendous.
I'm with you on Lady in Red and Moves Like Jagger. I'll tolerate Kiss from a Rose. I think it's funny.
Yes.
It's become a meme.
Yeah.
It still makes me laugh when it's used comedically, so I think that makes it tolerable.
Okay, that's understandable. I will grant you that. Have you ever heard the Seal cover that he did? He did a Manic Depression with Jeff Beck.
No.
There was a Jimi Hendrix tribute album that came out in the 90s, and he and Jeff Beck did Manic Depression, and it is phenomenal. Because as much as I hate Kiss from a Rose, Seal can sing. that man has pipes. And yeah, that cover Manic Depression, which is one of my favorite Jimi Hendrix songs, is tremendous. And my God, we have gotten off
I was going to say, I have an update on the Maximum Overdrive soundtrack. It is 100% AC/DC songs. The entire soundtrack is AC/DC.
That's
kind of love that.
That's the one that has Who Made Who on it, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Oh, best AC/DC song ever.
Because, I mean, all right, yeah, Truck Comes to Life and Tries to Kill People. That sounds like an AC/DC song. So,
so I still think the best use of an AC/DC song in a movie was in that animated movie where they were using Highway to Hell. And every time it got to the chorus, they like the music turned off for a second. It was like, Highway to... That was just... Was that...
What movie was that?
Oh, my God. Was it... It was a DreamWorks, I think. Was it the one with the guy with the big head?
Megamind?
Maybe. Oh, man.
This is way off track.
Yeah, it was something that my kids watched when they were young.
It reminded me, too, because, like, Dylan and I, we have a Snapchat with our youngest brother, and, like, we definitely used a Megamind filter on Snapchat, like, this week.
But
sorry, anybody from Sincere Engineer, for listening to this episode. Yeah,
Deanna,
we love your record. Yes.
you guys are amazing people. You've put out two tremendous albums that I was thinking about it today, in fact, and this is the dork that I am. I have a notepad document of my current top 25 artists of all time, and I was like, you know what? I need to make an adjustment. Sincere Engineer is going to jump into the top five. I'm sorry, but 7 Seconds and REM, you get bumped down a couple. It's got to adjust.
And it's great because it's wild because they only have two like full lengths,
and I desperately want to do an episode of my Dopey podcast about them, but I kind of have this slightly unwritten rule in my head that I'd really like the artists to have at least three releases, so I have more to pull from. And I mean, Sincere Engineer did put out a song on a Motown tribute record. They did, I should know this, a Jackson 5 song.
So weird. There's a Mo...
Oh, my God.
That's a weird band to be on a Motown tribute.
And what's great about it is it's just Deanna with an acoustic guitar. Oh, man, speaking of, have y'all ever heard her cover of the Phoebe Bridgers song, Kyoto?
No.
Oh, it's so good. It's her just with an acoustic guitar, and it is really, really good. It was one of those, she did it like, it was on a video of something fucking somewhere during lockdown that she did. Okay, hold on. I'm going to have to go to my...
I Want You Back is the Motown song.
Thank you, yes. Oh, it's so good. And it's one of those where you're like, okay, Deanna, I love you, but you don't have the singing range that anyone in the Jackson 5 had, and yet... It's amazing. It was like when I heard Frank Turner cover Queen's Somebody to Love. I'm like, Frank, honey, I love you. You are probably my favorite artist of all time. And you cannot sing like Freddie Mercury. You are not in the same universe. You are nowhere close. And I kid you not, he nailed that song. I saw it when the first time I saw him live, they did that. And he also did his cover of Tom Petty's American Girl. And that's real slow, and it's so good. Oh, but I digress. Anyway, yeah, sorry.
This is another digression. And not really even related all that much to... it's on the opposite side of the coin of what you just said, though. Have either of you heard that new cover of Christmas Wrapping by the Waitresses? There's like a new cover. I'm trying to find out who does the cover.
No.
And it's one of those ones that's like... The singer's too good for the song, and it's like, you can't do this then. You gotta be kind of not good.
I don't know what Christmas wrapping is, other than, you know, wrapping paper on Christmas presents, so.
Bah humbug, but that's too strong, because it is my favorite holiday.
Yeah, the Waitresses.
That's how she sings,
The 80s, is it Miranda Cosgrove? That can't be right.
iCarly sang that? Wow.
But there's a Kylie Minogue and Iggy Pop version of the song that I kind of want to hear now.
I don't know, man.
I've heard it lately, and it was just like, what are you doing? You can't sing it this way. It has to be sung like you're kind of bored.
I don't know, man. I almost might need to hear this iCarly version because I'm sorry, man. iCarly, hysterical show. That was so good. The Baby Spencer skits were so funny. Oh, man. I'm going to have to go back and watch some of that stuff because that mess was great. Baby Spencer was the freaking best.
I enjoyed some iCarly back in the day when it was on.
That's some good shit.
Did she ever have one of those, like, I know she had a music career. Did she ever have one of those Lindsay Lohan, Hilary Duff type, like, power pop rock records? Or was she just, like, straight pop?
I think she was straight pop. You know, I forget which episode you guys were talking about, and Lindsay Lohan came up, and you talked about Mean Girls and the Mean Girls soundtrack. Or no, not Mean Girls. Freaky Friday. And and the Halo Friendlies song, which the song that song in that soundtrack is that song slaps. It's really good. That whole soundtrack's really good. Even the Lindsay Lohan song is shockingly good. But this is, of course, when, you know, Demi Lovato was doing her basically pop punk phase. I forget the name of, she had one song that when my kids, we were listening to Radio Disney all the time, that I'm like, no, this song is legitimately freaking great. I can't tell you what it's called right now to save my life. But I also did have to see the Hannah Montana movie, the concert film. We saw that at midnight showing because that's the only ticket we could get to. And, you know, it was actually kind of like a concert. It was kind of fun. Not going to lie.
Hey, there's a reason why she still has a career in music.
The girl can sing. She's kind of lost her mind, and I really wish she would stop hanging out with Wayne Coyne from the Flaming Lips because he is,
Is that what she's doing now?
She's hung out with him for off and on a lot over the years. He's a weird fucking guy. Oh my God.
If she would just play country music.
Yeah.
Just like straightforward country music.
So speaking of Dylan, I have to ask you, I saw something on the Twitter machine today about an emo riff that you want to try to turn country.
It's very much an Intuit over riff. And it can't be because I don't want it to be.
Very curious. So,
I just gotta play it differently.
Okay, I look forward to hearing.
It's
this
almost
someday.
There. I've almost got it there.
We've been recording for almost 2 hours now, so I think this is a good time to tell everybody where to get a hold of. To explain the podcast to us.
Okay, so the podcast I honestly blatantly ripped off from another podcast on Spotify called Bandsplain, which is honestly 100 times better than my dumbass. And so Spotify has a platform that you can host podcasts on called Anchor. It's free. It's super easy to use. And the nice thing about it is you can do podcasts with music that actually plays the music, but you have to do it through Spotify because that's where the music plays from. And oh my God, it's so much easier to do just from an editing standpoint. And I don't have to worry about getting sued by anybody. Not that anyone ever listens to anything I do, which is totally fine because why should you? But the gimmick of this show is take a look at the career of one musical artist through the lens of five of their classic songs, or what I think of as their classic songs. Because in some cases, I have picked very deep cuts. I know on the Jawbreaker episode, for example, the Dear You song I picked was a super deep cut. That name I'm blanking on right now. Oh my God, it's one of my favorite Jawbreaker songs. And I've completely forgotten what the hell it's called. Bad Scene, Everybody's Fault. That one.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I freaking love that song. That should have been the single. Had that been the single with a poppin' video, could have been huge. History could have been totally different until people bought the record and were like, what the fuck is this?
I mean, maybe that's the reason why they didn't. It is the most like different song on the record.
Yeah. But what I came up with is to try to really, I don't know if analyze is the right word because I'm not smart enough to really do any of that, but to talk about a band through some just very specific highlights of their career. And I have not done an episode in a couple weeks because of school. So I have this weekend, I have a paper I have to write. So hopefully I will have that done in time. The next couple of episodes as of this recording are actually going to be best of the year. So I'm going to do the top 10 records. So one episode will be 10 through 6, and then another episode will be 5 through 1. Going to do like a couple episodes coming up. I'm going to do a Dag Nasty episode, which is in direct response to y'all's Dag Nasty Field Day episode. Still freaking love that record. So good. I will take Peter Kortner, Danzig over, or Danzig, Jesus. Dag Nasty.
Peter Kortner fronting Danzig.
That actually might be kind of awesome. I'm not going to lie. But I'll take, I'm a bigger fan of the Peter Kortner era of Dag Nasty than I am of the other eras. Another probably take that no one else will want to have. But yeah, so I'm enjoying it. It's fun. It's minimal work. I just record little bits about each song, throw some other things in there. And sometimes I will break the 5-song limit. I know the very first episode I did 7 songs.
Yeah.
So I don't mind breaking.
Like episode rules. 1, you break your own rule. Yep.
Hey, it's my show. I can do whatever the hell I want. Yeah. So that's that. You can find that on Spotify. If you, for some crazy reason, if you feel like following me, you can do so damn near everywhere at Oklahoma Lefty, at least everywhere that's okay for someone who is a Gen Xer to be on. You're not going to find me on the TikTok. I'm not on the Snapchats. There are certain things I'm like, no, unless you are like the fucking Rock or famous, you do not need to be on some of these platforms because they are literally for children or people who were children when you were the age that you should be on that platform of. But so there's the music blog that I've been writing for like 15 years. Didn't start as music, but no one cares. That's oklahomalefty.com. You can just find me all over with that.
Yeah, you got that IP on lockdown.
Damn right.
You need to just create accounts just to like make sure that like no one takes it and starts an Oklahoma Lefty TikTok and then like is doing like dances and pretending it's you the whole time.
True. You know, I did, my son used to sometimes does YouTube videos and he's actually really good at them, but we came up with an idea for doing videos called With One Hand, which would just be videos of me doing mundane shit, but all you can see are my hands, hand and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be like, how do you tie a shoe with one hand? And it would be a video of me tying my shoes.
Actually, that would be a good series, I think, at least as far as like, unless it was meant to have like a comedic bent to it and you were like doing something funny on purpose.
Well, I've legit had people ask me in the past, like I had someone come up and sit down next to me once, go tie your shoes for me. She couldn't imagine how I tied my shoes, but I could do one of me typing because I'm actually on a keyboard. I can type pretty fast.
Yeah.
Not on my phone. No, on my phone, it angers my son because I'm like pointing and I've also got fat thumb. So I'm like super slow.
Have you used the swipe one where you like just kind of like slide around and do it that way?
Fuck no. No, God. Freaks me out.
I do it when I'm driving, when I should be paying attention to the road.
Sir, you need to not die on the road. You have loved ones who care about you. And, you know, I listen to your podcast every week and...
Yeah. Got to put that content out.
Yes. Excellent. By the way, excellent content. I really do enjoy just the show. I enjoy what you guys do on Patreon. I've thoroughly enjoyed listening to what y'all do. I've enjoyed getting to know you guys over the last couple of years. So I thank you for inviting me into the fray and letting me be part of what y'all do because I've really enjoyed it. And I like to think of you guys as friends. And I'm glad to have found your show and to have met you. So someday, hopefully, we'll actually be able to meet in real life.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I feel the same way. Like, that's been my absolute favorite thing about doing this show is, one, Dylan and I are going to talk about music regardless. Like, it's what we do. It's what we've always done. So that's going to happen regardless. What we've done with this show, meeting people like you and like actually making what I considered friends from this show is like the truly like the best part of everything we've done. So if we, you know, stop the show tomorrow, it would be worth it just for the handful of friends we made doing it. So thank you. Thank you for the kind words.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And your dollars, because you have been a patron probably since the beginning, I believe. I think you signed up day one.
I think I did. I was like, I was very kind of anti-Patreon for a long time, just partially because I'm poor. And there was nothing that jumped out to me. And then when I saw y'all announced your thing, I was like, okay, I'm signing up for this. And then I finally broke down and you were like the glass breaking. So I've signed up for a couple more. I had to sign up for Voices of Wrestling because I need that extra flagship Joe and Rich content. because that's it. If you are a professional wrestling fan and you are not listening to the Voices of Wrestling flagship podcast, you are missing out on the best wrestling analysis out there, bar none, hands down, best shit going on, and they're hilarious.
You know I host a wrestling podcast. Why would you say things like this?
Because I was one of the original co-hosts, and when Floyd was the host of that show, and I would always say, like, at the end of the year, say, like, here are my favorite podcasts. He'd always get pissed at me, you know, air quotes pissed, because I would never include it. I'm like, bro, I'm not including a show that I was part of in the creation of. That's, I'm just not, like, if I was in a band, my album would never, ever sniff my top records of the year list. Like, get the fuck out of here with that. No, I don't care. I don't care if I was in the Beatles. No. Part of that is, though, another reason why I love Sincere Engineer so much is the self-loathing. I can so identify with the amount of self-loathing that happens in these lyrics. I'm like, yes, I suck this bad. It's good shit, man. More people need some good, healthy self-loathing. No, actually, they really don't. Please don't do that. It's really not good. Be humble. Yeah, but don't hate yourself. Yeah. I'll hate myself for you. So it'll work out.
And then you can join that said Patreon over on patreon.com at punklottopod. This week we're doing a challengeography on the band The Muffs. We didn't finish the discography, so there will be a part two of that, which, as of this release date, you'll have already heard the first part. You can join that for $1. You get access to all of our bonus audio.
Literally cheaper than a big gulp. Come on, people.
Yeah, and it's, I figured it was, the whole reason why I even thought to do it is because one day I added up all the hosting fees for the podcast that I've accumulated over the last couple of years. And I was like, well, I've spent $400 on this podcast in the over the 3 years, so I want to make a little bit back. So.
Oh, wow. Wow. I will definitely do another $10 soon.
Is that what I should have been doing all along, is just tell people how much money I've spent hosting?
Yeah. Though I have an idea for my next $10 record for you guys, and it's not one of my all-time favorites. So it's something I'm super curious about your takes on. So look forward to that in the coming weeks and months.
Well, we still gotta get Steve's done before then. So
yes,
that would be my co-host Steve Long. He has paid for an episode that probably 2 months ago. But like every time we try and get him on, like something, you know, he's out of town or something. So we'll get him eventually. But that podcast is Around the Ring. Dave, you are an originator of the show.
So Steve technically started the show, but I was on it from day one. It was him, his wife, and me were the original hosts. Steve then, his attentions went elsewhere, and so I kept going, and I, for a couple of years, did a very bad imitation of the Solid Monster Sounds Off, and that's basically what the show was, and I had a couple different co-hosts, and then eventually my good friend Floyd Johnson joined. And after a while, I stopped watching wrestling because WWE is the drizzling shits. And also Vince McMahon is, a, from all accounts, a horrible human being. So I just couldn't anymore. And Floyd got another co-host. And then AEW happened, and Floyd loves Cody Rhodes. And he started an AEW-related podcast and then ended up doing that. And so then Steve decided to take up Around the Ring again after getting back into wrestling, thanks to CM Punk coming back. And no one cares about any of this. I apologize. Feel free to edit all of that out.
You know, I do that show every week, and I often forget to plug it. So,
yeah. But you can find that on all social media platforms. It's at Around the Ring OK. And there's even a website that no one ever updates anymore. But that's okay. And it's...
I didn't even know there was a website.
Yeah, aroundtheringok.wordpress.com.
And then we're on social media, all that good stuff. We don't need to plug that. You know how to Google. But thank you so much for doing this. Thank you for being our last-minute replacement. But I think it was an easy record for you to talk about.
Oh, yeah. I can talk about Sincere Engineer and Ron Bithian all day long. So thank you again, gentlemen. And sorry I talk so much, because I have a bad tendency of doing it.
So do we.